I personally know a thing or two about having a family that many people might say is not normal.
Mommy! The time was very bad. People couldn't get work. And the inflation was a horrible thing.
Paragraph 175 was an archaic anti-homosexual German law from the late 1800s, which was revamped by the Nazis to make it easier to round up homosexual men.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. England's health service slams pediatric gender-affirming healthcare. Gay state senator Father Knows Best on trans sports ban. And documentary film recalls the Nazis' gay purge. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 20th, 2024. A highly controversial report by England's National Health Service calls the medical evidence supporting pediatric gender-affirming healthcare remarkably weak. Well-known British pediatrician Hilary Cass was commissioned in 2020 to lead an investigation into the sharp rise in referrals to the only clinic for gender-variant youth. The Cass Review drew on research conducted by independent academics at the University of York and comments by clinicians and families. The resulting report, released on April 10th, acknowledges that young people with gender dysphoria need specific health care, but it pillories all the current social and medical modes of treatment. A plethora of previous studies into the care of those whose gender differs from that identified at birth are poor quality research, according to the Cass Review. It questions the use of reversible puberty blockers and hormone therapies that has long been accepted as the correct health care for trans young people.
One of the Cass Review's critics is Dr. Hane Wong of the trans healthcare service organization Gender GP. In his words, it dismisses a very large number of studies and omits studies from the past 2 years. Hence, it neglects a vast amount of evidence on the benefits of gender-affirming medical treatment for trans youth. Others are concerned that the review undermines efforts to ban conversion therapy. Providers might fear that advising caution in gender dysphoria cases could be equated with debunked methods of changing sexual orientation or gender identity through counseling, according to The Guardian. Trans young people's access to puberty blockers and hormone therapies in England has already been restricted. It will become close to impossible under the government of Tory Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. The opposition Labour Party is expected to regain power in national elections later this year, but that won't help. A party official told The Sun this week that he no longer stands by his previous statements that trans women are women.
The Cass Review's conclusions are reportedly being evaluated by the independent National Health Services of Scotland and Wales. NHS England will now hone in on gender-affirming healthcare for trans adults. It announced a new review the day after the Cass release, allegedly based on whistleblower complaints. The Cass Review is already having ripple effects in Belgium and the Netherlands. Health officials in both countries are now questioning the pediatric gender-affirming care they offer.
LGBTQ activists in Uganda are appealing the Constitutional Court's April 3rd ruling that upheld the horrific Anti-Homosexuality Act. The 22 plaintiffs will take their argument that what's known as the Kill the Gays Law violates Uganda's constitution to the Supreme Court. The Anti-Homosexuality Act punishes aggravated homosexuality with death. It also increases the penalty for private, consensual, adult, same-gender sex with up to life in prison. An earlier version was struck down in 2014 on a legal technicality. Officials in the East African nation thumbed their noses at the condemnations of international human rights groups. Several Western nations threatened economic sanctions. The World Bank has already suspended millions in loans to Uganda from the International Monetary Fund because the law directly violates its anti-discrimination policies.
The United States Supreme Court is allowing Idaho's ban on gender-affirming health care for trans young people to take effect. The 2023 law makes providing that care a felony. A temporary injunction against the law's enforcement was issued in December when U.S. District Judge B. Lynn Windmill said he believed it would be found unconstitutional. However, the 6-3 conservative majority of the Supreme Court reversed that decision on April 15th. Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote, "Just do a little forum shopping for a willing judge, and at the outset of the case, you can win a decree barring the enforcement of a duly enacted law against anyone." Liberal justices Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan dissented. Two trans teens and their families are challenging the measure, represented by the American Civil Liberties Union of Idaho, its national office, and three private law firms. The high court decision specifically shielded the plaintiffs, but the draconian Idaho ban can now be enforced against everyone else. A joint statement warned that the ruling allows the state to shut down the care that thousands of families rely on while sowing further confusion and disruption.
West Virginia's law excluding transgender athletes from competing in school sports is out of bounds, according to the Richmond, Virginia-based 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Judge Toby Haytens wrote that the state's Save Women's Sports Act amounts to sex-based discrimination against the plaintiff. West Virginia's Republican Attorney General Patrick Morrissey said, "We know the law is correct, and we will use every available tool to defend it." ACLU attorneys for 8th-grade trans girl track athlete Becky Pepper Jackson argue that the ban violates Title IX, a federal law that forbids sex discrimination in schools. In Judge Hayton's words, "Becky has been recognized by her community and legally changed her name, and West Virginia has issued a birth certificate listing her sex as female, offering her a choice between not participating in sports and participating only on boys' teams is no real choice at all." Becky's attorneys say the ruling is a tremendous victory for our client. Unfortunately, Haytens restricted his ruling to the plaintiff's participation on girls' teams based on her specific situation. He took pains to say that Title IX doesn't necessarily require all schools in the state to allow every trans girl to play on girls' teams.
Bills to restrict the rights of transgender people were vetoed by two Democratic governors this week. Kansas Governor Laura Kelly rejected the state legislature's prohibition on health care providers offering gender-affirming treatment to trans people under the age of 18. The Republican-backed measure also opened the door to civil lawsuits and potential disciplinary actions against offenders. In her veto message, Kelly wrote, "This divisive legislation targets a small group of Kansans by placing government mandates on them and dictating to parents how to best raise and care for their children. I do not believe that is a conservative value, and it's certainly not a Kansas value."
Meanwhile, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed a bill that critics say would have virtually erased the legal existence of the state's transgender and non-binary people. It would have removed the word gender from state law and replaced it with the word sex as defined solely by biology. Hobbs also vetoed a bill that would have allowed public school teachers to post the Ten Commandments in their classrooms.
Finally,
Blue.
Bluey has joined the ranks of animated TV shows for preschoolers featuring queer characters. The adventures of the 6-year-old healer puppy, her family and friends are set in Brisbane, Queensland, but the show is wildly popular around the world. In this week's extra-long Season 3 finale, Bluey's mom and dad might have to sell the family home and move away. Her sad scenario prompts a classroom discussion about other sad stories. Her Chihuahua classmate Pretzel casually notes that,
"When my guinea pig ran away, my mom's told me he might come back, but he didn't."
Aww.
TikToker Aussie girl Marge called it a blink and you'll miss it moment.
"When my guinea pig ran away, my mom's told me he might come back, but he didn't."
Still, fans around the world celebrate the episode, titled The Sign. User at Babe Dabuni proclaimed, "Finally, it's the only thing Bluey was missing." Of course, social media homophobes clutched animated pearls in response. Bluey streams on Disney Plus in North America and the UK, on ABC iView Down Under, and on several other outlets. Producer Sam Moore told BBC Radio 4 earlier this week that Season 4 is already in the works. He says, "I'm sure we have many more surprises in store for you."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending April 20th, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm John Dyer V. Stay safe. Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you. Later in the program,
the whole history of the Pink Triangle really has been nothing but mythology for all of us until a witness can come forth and say, "This indeed happened to me."
When I got the first time to the police, and they asked me, "You are a homosexual man?" And I said, "Yes, I am. Everybody knows it."
But first,
bless the beast and the children.
Passionate voices filled the Nebraska Capitol building this month when State Senator Kathleen Kauth tried for the second year to sideline trans student athletes.
LB 575, the Sports and Spaces Bill, is designed to provide for the protection in girls' sports.
Kauth also authored the bill last year that banned pediatric gender-affirming health care. If her Sports and Spaces Act were to get over the finish line, it would certainly be cheered by Republican Governor Jim Pillen.
There's nobody that wants their daughter to be in a locker room with a boy. And there's nobody that wants their son to be in a locker room with girls.
Democratic Senator Michaela Kavanaugh vowed to block Kauth's shot with a filibuster if the bill came to the floor.
"Get ready to hear my recipes, my movie synopsis, and on and on. Until 575 is dead, I refuse to let this happen without a cost. And that cost is time."
Senator Merv Reapy teamed with Kauth on the bill last year, but revealed he was cooling toward it after meeting with trans families.
"Students who are transgender and their families do not seek attention, but rather accommodation."
By far the most influential speaker was Senator John Fredrickson, the Nebraska legislature's first out gay man. Fredrickson and his husband are parents themselves, and he directed his remarks not to his colleagues, but to the trans children and their families witnessing the proceedings in the gallery.
The world can be tough and scary. I personally know a thing or two about having a family that many people might say is not normal. I stand here today confidently to tell you, if you love your kid unconditionally for who they are, and if they know they're loved, you can weather a lot. So this weekend, when you go home, I want you to love your babies. Surround yourself with the people who love you. Let them know you love them. And don't spend a minute of your energy or time thinking about any of my colleagues in here who are too scared of difference to allow themselves to understand and celebrate the beauty and joy that you bring to our state. Thank you, Mr. President.
After Senator John Fredrickson's words, the Sports and Spaces Act fell 2 points short on a motion to end debate and continue to a full vote. Senator Reapy was one of the defectors. The other was Senator Tom Brandt, who complained that there was no provision to fund the chromosome testing necessary to implement the ban. Count the bill out for now, but Kalth promises a third match next year.
The children.
Rising right-wing driven anti-Semitism and homo-transphobia are making analogies with the 1930s and 40s more and more common. A documentary about that period we featured when it was released in 2000 is still meaningful, but some listeners may find the presentation disturbing.
Irgendwelche Anhänger irgendwelcher Weltanschauungen, sondern dass wir sind Angehörige eines Volkes.
Sie heil! Sie heil!
Gay documentarians Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman have 2 Academy Awards, multiple Emmy Awards, 3 Peabody Awards, and a commitment to stories not often told. Their documentary, Paragraph 175, is named for the 19th century German law prohibiting male homosexual activities used by the Nazis during World War II and enforced in both East and West Germany until the late 1960s. The film has been called haunting, heartening, illuminating, and brilliant. Steve Pride spoke with filmmakers Epstein and Friedman and brought along some clips from the movie.
The pink triangle has been adopted as a symbol by the gay community, but its history and meaning have not been well understood by most gays and certainly not by the public at large. A documentary from Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman explores a history that has not been told on film and has hardly been looked at in history books. It's called Paragraph 175, and is narrated by Rupert Everett.
Half a century ago, the Nazi regime set out to rid the German nation of homosexuality. Close to 100,000 men, most of them from German Christian families, were arrested. An estimated 10 to 15,000 were sent to concentration camps. Today, fewer than 10 of these men are known to be alive.
I am Rob Epstein, and I am co-producer, director of Paragraph 175 with my partner in filmmaking, Jeffrey Friedman.
I'm Jeffrey Friedman. Rob and I have been making documentaries together for 14 years. Our first film together through our company, Telling Pictures, was Common Threads about the AIDS epidemic. And we made The Celluloid Closet. And Rob made The Times of Harvey Milk before we started working together as a team.
Paragraph 175 was an archaic anti-homosexual German law from the late 1800s, which was revamped by the Nazis to make it easier to round up homosexual men, largely just by inference. So if someone's name was found in an address book, for instance, of someone who was known to be homosexual by implication, they could be brought forth and tried for violating paragraph 175. So they made it much broader than its original intention.
I asked Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman about the genesis of the documentary.
Rob and I were in Amsterdam in 1996 for the theatrical premiere of The Celluloid Closet there. It was a fabulous premiere with like hordes and hordes of Dutch drag queens. And while we were getting ready to go to the opening, we got a letter at our hotel from Dr. Klaus Mueller asking for a meeting. We had no idea who this was, but we were interested to meet him. He said he had a project he wanted to talk to us about.
And the letter was on United States Holocaust Memorial Museum letterhead, so we had some notion of what his area of expertise was. And over the course of a two-hour lunch, he told us about his work of the past several years, which has been specifically to do oral histories with homosexual survivors of Nazi persecution. And he wanted us to consider working with him on making a film about some of these men who he said would be willing to come forward for the first time and tell their stories. Of course, we immediately understood the necessity of the film and the necessity of it being done quickly because these men are old. And if a film were to be made, it would have to be done pronto.
Out of the eight or so men who are known to have survived persecution by the Nazis and who are alive and willing to come forward, we spoke to five for some time, and one Jewish lesbian woman, Annette Eich, who is very helpful in painting a picture of what life was like in Berlin before the war.
The time was very bad. People couldn't get work, and the inflation was a horrible thing. At first, we didn't believe it. We laughed about him, that such a person like Hitler, that the people would stay behind him. Promises, promises. They believed it.
According to Epstein and Friedman, the persecution that came with the rise of Adolf Hitler followed a period of unprecedented freedom.
Berlin specifically really was a mecca for gay people, very much in the way that we think of San Francisco or Amsterdam today, I think. It seemed to be a place where pretty much anything went.
Falling in love again, never wanted to. What am I to do? I can't help it.
Although there was a law in the books, just as there's a law in the books in many states in this country, it wasn't observed until the Nazis came to power and found a new use for it.
I should say that the whole history of the Pink Triangle really has been nothing but mythology for all of us until, you know, until a witness can come forth and say, this indeed happened to me. Then we're, in effect, just talking about mythology, and that's what this history has been until now.
When I got the first time to the police, and they asked me, you are a homosexual man. And I said, yes, I am. Everybody knows it. I never said I'm not. I had an affair with three or four students. And I was the bad man who seduced these students. I was 28. The students were 18, 19, 20 youngsters in their opinion.
The numbers are really tricky and difficult. We're talking about a group that was not well identified and, you know, about which there was no really clear policy within the Nazi hierarchy, except that the Nazis were against homosexuals. That was clear. So there really are no absolutely hard numbers to go by. Historians have more or less come to a consensus of 100,000 arrests, 50,000 convictions. And of those, 10 to 15,000 went to concentration camps. Once they got in the camps, the death rates of homosexuals were among the highest of the non-Jewish prisoners. So it makes sense that there would be so few alive today. Paragraph 175 stayed on the books in the Nazi form in West Germany until 1970. The East Germans reverted back to the old version, the original paragraph 175, the original wording, and repealed it a year before the West Germans did. That's one reason that it took so long for these stories to come out. This really is the last untold story of that period, because the men were still considered criminals after the war. The Allied judges that went in and reorganized the defeated German nation after the war made a determination as to how concentration camp inmates were to be treated, and they classified the homosexuals the same as they classified the criminals. So you could conceivably have been liberated from a concentration camp and then sent to prison to serve out the rest of your sentence.
So there was no incentive for them to come forward and tell their story. They were living in a society that regarded them as criminals. And they're also from a generation where homosexuality equals shame.
This has been a visit with Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman. Paragraph 175 is a New Yorker film release of a Telling Pictures production. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
You can stream Paragraph 175 at a number of online platforms. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by John Dyer V and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our archival correspondent was Steve Pride. You heard music by the Doobie Brothers and the Carpenters. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Jane and Deborah Cluey Charitable Fund and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WOMR Provincetown, Massachusetts, KYAQ Newport, Lincoln County, Oregon, to MTM Coonamble, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.